It's KUOW's The Record.
It's a shame that they're behaving this way, but they are behaving in a very, very dangerous manner, and something will have to be done about it.
President Donald Trump speaking this morning in Poland about North Korea's latest missile launch. The North Koreans test launched a long-range missile this week that some experts say could reach Alaska, and maybe someday they'd like to put a nuclear warhead on it. How did we get here? And why is a secretive, isolated, by all accounts, starving regime so focused on getting the attention of the United States in this way? Let's figure it out with Seattle-based journalist and author Blaine Harden, a producer for the PBS show Frontline. He spent years writing books and articles on North Korea. Welcome, Blaine.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
We invited you here to talk about the backstory, and I'm going to get to that in a minute, but there's so much heated ICBM talk right now. I just want to know, do you lose 1 minute of sleep over headlines about a North Korean missile test?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. It's very concerning. They're making steady progress to the creation of a missile that could hit the United States, and it's concerning.
Now the backstory, and we'll work forward. How did we get here with North Korea?
Well, the United States and South Korea fought a very bloody war with the North, 1950 to 1953.
My father was there.
Right. Yeah. And it's a war that a lot of Americans forget about, but it's a war that the North Koreans think ended last Thursday. They live in isolation. And they're constantly reminded about the suffering of the population during the war. It's important to realize the North Koreans started that war by invading the South, but the United States came in and then punished North Korea severely for the invasion. The bombing of North Korea was continuous. It lasted for almost 3 years. And American Air Force bombers destroyed every city and town in the country, and by U.S. government estimates, killed as many as 20% of the population.
20%.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of suffering. What does that have to do with where we are today with North Korea?
The current regime is, you know, it's a dictatorship. It's a totalitarian dictatorship, the longest lasting such government in world history. It's lasted more than twice as long as Mao's China or Stalin's Soviet Union, 70 years almost. And what a dictatorship like that needs is an enemy. An enemy is a great reason for having a dictator, because he can fight the enemy, he can protect the people. Getting back to the war, the regime constantly reminds its population of their suffering during the war. Very few people are alive from that era, but they're reminded almost on a daily basis of what the United States did to them. And the bargain that the Kim family has struck with its people, it's a repressive bargain, but the bargain still is, we'll protect you from the American bastards, as they call them, and in exchange, you'll put up with repression endlessly. So confrontation with the United States through nukes, long-range missiles, is really part of a survival strategy for that kind of government.
How much do you think the North Korean people know about their relative deprivation, because that would be part of the bargain that they would decide to strike or not with their dictator?
They know a lot more than they used to. In the past 20 years, the border with China has become semi-permeable. Lots of electronic gizmos have moved across that border, DVDs, laptops, USB fobs, and small radios. There are some U.S. government estimates that between 40 and 60% of the population listens regularly to foreign radio broadcasts. And so people do not live in information isolation like they used to. However, the state is still incredibly repressive. And while people may have more information in their heads about the outside world, their ability to act on that, to have a civil society where they can go and talk with their friends about it, is severely restricted.
But is there evidence that the people are chafing under that and that they want a different bargain with Kim Jong-un?
Very little evidence of it.
Okay.
But there's evidence that they have more information.
Okay. All right. So given this backdrop then, what does Kim Jong-un want right now?
I think he wants to survive. He saw what happened. He and his father, Kim Jong-il, and his grandfather, they saw what happened in Eastern Europe with the collapse of communism, particularly what happened to Nicolae Ceausescu, who was lined up against a wall and machine gunned to death, along with his lovely wife. And they also saw what happened to Gaddafi after he gave up his nukes. So the lesson they've learned is endless confrontation and toughness is a way to survive. And the proof is sort of in the pudding. The grandfather died at 84 in his bed. The father died at 69 in his bed or in a hospital bed. And Kim Jong-un is a good student of his family's history.
But he's not just acquiring the ability to launch missiles and maybe put a warhead on them quietly in self-defense. He's also acting so belligerent. How is that part of the plan?
Well, if you can confront the great enemy, the great Satan, the United States, and show strength, it gives you legitimacy as a dictator.
Okay. And what's the ultimate goal in this? So he survives, and that's it. My people like me because I'm tough and belligerent, and countries won't mess with me if I have a nuclear warhead. What about the possibility? Well, especially Donald Trump, you know, seems like the kind of person who might try to prevent North Korea from getting a nuclear warhead. Is that part of Kim's calculation?
I think their calculation is that nukes are a great insurance policy for the long-term survival of the regime. North Korea, as I said, did attack the South in 1950. They did with the backing of the Soviet Union, with Stalin's approval and arms. At the time of that attack, the North Koreans, the Soviet Union, were convinced that the United States would not respond. In the Soviet archives, there are conversations that have been released which show that Kim assured Stalin the Americans would not respond, and Stalin basically said, I don't think they will either. For Kim Jong-un, looking at the contemporary situation of whether an invasion of South Korea or an unprovoked missile attack on Japan or the United States, he knows there would be a sharp and punishing and destructive response. He's not crazy. His father wasn't crazy. His grandfather wasn't crazy. And again, this regime has survived longer than any such government in world history. So they know what they're doing. They do not offer their people a good life, but that's not the point. The point is to continue to control this relatively small country, 25 million people, and not be tried for war crimes. It's really worth mentioning, too, that North Korea is incredibly cruel to its own people and has been in a sustained way that is also without precedent in world history. They've had concentration camps in the country for more than twice as long as Stalin operated the Gulag. And it continues to function. Satellite photographs now show that those camps are a vibrant part of the survival system. He tries to intimidate people, the leadership does, and those who will not be intimidated are sent to the camps where they're worked to death.
So now what to do? You heard President Trump say something has to be done about North Korea. I'm sure he's listening to us right now, so here's your chance. How should the United States deal with North Korea?
Well, I'm much less comfortable predicting what should be done because I don't know. But it seems to me that diplomacy is a good option because it's cheap, people don't die, and it buys time. At some point, this regime is going to collapse. So diplomacy...
How do you envision it collapsing?
More information, is coming into the country. Fewer people are wholly captive to the Kim's version of reality.
Okay.
Another thing that's happening that's really destabilizing to the Kim regime is the marketization of the economy. There was a severe famine in the 1990s after the collapse of the Soviet Union, which ruined their command economy in North Korea. And to survive, the Kim regime had to put up with markets, street markets, to deliver food, clothing, things that the state could no longer do. That market has become a very important part of the North Korean economy. People have made money, people who do not work for the state. In a state like North Korea, if you have money of your own and you're not beholden to the state in the same way, that's a completely different kind of government, of situation to control. And so that is also destabilizing. So information and money that's not in the complete control of the regime are new developments and destabilizing going forward.
So maybe wait and the North Korean experiment will collapse of its own weight.
And negotiations could do, the United States could offer maybe to cut back on its military practices with South Korea for war. It could offer diplomatic recognition. It could declare an end to the Korean War, which is never really formally end. It could give North Korea some of the things that it's long wanted in hopes that with an agreement that the North Koreans would suspend development of missile launches and of nuclear development. Not get rid of it, but suspend new development.
Uh-huh.
That's a possibility.
Okay. Will you come again? I mean, let's just watch this together and follow it along.
I'd be happy to talk about it.
Blaine Harden, journalist, author, spent his career writing about North Korea. His latest book is King of Spies, and it comes out this October. Blaine, thank you for setting the scene for us.
My pleasure.
KUOW's The Record. Back in a moment.